You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh, welcome.
Good to be back.
Josh and I hosted the listener preview for Beasts of the Southern Wild, and it's going to be screened again at the festival. Josh, what did you make of Beasts of the Southern Wild? How would you describe it?
Coming-of-age tale, in a very broad sense. The lead character is a young child. It's filmed in sort of the bayou, Louisiana. And I guess the conflict of the film involves this sort of small settlement, aptly named the Bathtub, on the very edges of the bayou. And they encounter, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be Hurricane Katrina, but it's a natural disaster akin to that. And it's sort of filtered through the eyes of this child with a very magic realist sort of sensibility.
Mm, weird.
I thought this was utterly engrossing.
Yes, gorgeous.
Really
gorgeous,
amazing
but
film.
But not your regular plot development, story arc, act one, act two, act three.
No, it has this strange, this mix between this magical realist imagination sort of fantasy elements, but also sort of this gritty realism as well. Mm. It doesn't shy away from the sort of the poverty that these characters
these
are living in.
These people are really, really poor. They live in a junkyard.
But the thing I really appreciate in terms of the depiction of the poverty, people have used the term poverty porn. I don't think it is at all. It's not really exploitative. It's not sort of saying, let's all pity these poor, pathetic beings.
No.
There's an incredible sense of community amongst these
yes.
characters, which I found really, really appealing, particularly when in a later scene where they're sort of being removed to a shelter, which is very sterile and cold, and you almost wish that they were back, you know, having that community
yes.
in the bathtub. Remarkable film.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Raphael Epstein, indeed, with you. Josh Nelson is here. His film blog is called filmology.com. You spell that with A-P-H. Josh, we were talking about Beasts of the Southern Wild. It appealed to me. Yes, it's beautiful. Yes, you're right. It doesn't look like the poverty is being exploited in any way. What did you think they were aiming for? What are they trying? That was what I actually came out of the film really wondering. And we should say this. We'll give you some session times for this one at the film festival soon. But what are they trying to do with a film like that, do you think?
Good question. There's definitely a climate change environmental theme.
Oh, really? You got that? Oh,
absolutely.
I didn't get that at all.
Well, this backstory that's part of the imagination themes in the film,
yes.
with the ice caps melting and these beasts being released that have been frozen within these ice caps for
yep.
thousands of years. And the symbolism...
Didn't occur to me
right.
at all.
Okay. Well, it has a strange post-apocalyptic feel in many
yeah,
ways
definitely.
Because we don't see the communities outside, really, of this the isolated one. It almost feels like Waterworld. But, yeah, definitely the climate change themes and this sense of unstoppable force or this unstoppable progress that's, you know, led to perhaps things like this poverty and the state of the world, the natural world.
And a remarkable performance by a very young girl. What are the other session times?
So it's playing twice during the festival, Wednesday the 8th of August at 9 p.m. and Friday the 10th of August at 6:30.
Okay, you can always just go to the MIFF website. Beasts of the Southern Wild is the name of the film. Josh Nelson is here. Filmology.com's the blog. Josh, The Sapphires was the opening film at the Melbourne International Film Festival last night. I know people in the office really enjoyed it. What did you think?
Well, it was a very loving audience for the opening night. I hate to say it, I felt it was a little bit mixed.
Josh Nelson, joy killer.
I know. I felt ashamed saying that last night. I had to be very right. sort of hush-hush in admitting it and now on radio.
Deborah Mailman was sitting in that seat on Wednesday.
I know. Yes, I was listening in. That was good. Look, to her credit, she was brilliant. Let's start with what the film did really well. The performances by the four ladies are great. Deborah Mailman's really strong. Chris O'Dowd, who's the band manager, who people will be familiar with from either Bridesmaids or the IT Crowd, really great. Great comic sensibility.
He's the one who inducts the Aboriginal women into Seoul.
That's right, and takes them to Vietnam, which is obviously based on a true story. This is the setup of the film. That the performance side and the music is really great. I thought it was a little uneven was some of the scripting and some of the dramatic moments in the middle act. Once they get to Vietnam, I just think the film needed a stronger sort of structure to give a sense of direction of where the characters were going or to play on the fact that they're in this strange land and don't really know what's going on.
Did you not care about what was going to happen to them?
Not really. I didn't get that sense of danger. They sort of, scenes sort of work in isolation, but I felt the chain of scenes could have been stronger in terms of building up that drama. And look, it's very similar to The Commitments in terms of, you know, getting this band together with the soul music as well.
Yeah.
The Commitments had that really strong developing structure where we got that real key sense of the internal conflicts that grew and grew. Here, the conflicts between certain characters appear in one scene, then seem to get forgotten about, and then sort of reemerge later. Look, these are sort of small criticisms. The film is obviously, you know, the crowd last night really loved it.
And it's opening next week, general release next week.
Yeah, it gets a proper general release next week. You know, it's fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Some minor criticisms I had also was the characterisations, some of the racial characterisations are done in pretty broad strokes. Like most of the African Americans are all jive talking African Americans, and it's thought, I don't know if you needed to do that. You know, I know it's a mass appeal film. I know it's a, you know, it's not trying to be a deeply serious.
110 countries. Harvey Weinstein liked it. Picked it up before Cannes.
Well, there's lots of I got the feeling. I'm not sure if I was just looking for this or not, but there's definitely an appeal for an American audience. There's lots of inclusion of American civil rights. Aspects, which makes sense in the context of the film and the comparisons between the indigenous situation and the African American civil rights. But, you know, scenes like the an indigenous community back home, all crowded around a TV watching a speech by Martin Luther King, felt, I don't know, a little bit clunky in the context of what was going on. I thought the setting in Vietnam stuff worked better. Look, these are sort of fairly minor criticisms, but, you know, it didn't love it as much as I was kind of sort of hoping to.
Okay. Look, that is The Sapphires, Deborah Mailman, Wayne Blair's the director, Jessica Mowboy, of course, the other big name, clearly doing a lot of the heavy lifting with the singing. It's coming up to 8 minutes to six. What else is coming up at the Melbourne Film Festival people maybe should keep their eyes open for?
Okay, well, it kicks off in earnest today, so if opening was last night. There's a few films that I wanted to pick out for the coming week. A Japanese film called I Wish. I'm fairly certain that there's tickets available for both sessions, one on tomorrow at 1:30.
And I Wish.
Yeah, I Wish. It's by a Japanese director, Hirokazu Koreeda, who is a regular appearer at the MIFF Festival. I saw a film of his about 10 years ago, a film called Afterlife, which is one of the most amazing films I've ever seen. The setup of that film is basically this idea of people die and they are taken to this sort of old school building, and they have to pick, they've got a week to pick their favourite memory from their life, and these people recreate that memory, film it, and then they screen it, and then the screening of watching this, their favourite memory, sort of is their transition point into the afterlife.
Wow,
incredibly
what a trippy film.
Beautiful film too. Lots of it, sort of almost like an interview, this cross between this sort of documentaries, people talking about this key moment in their life.
So this is his previous film.
So this is the previous film, but this idea or this thing that runs through most of his films, this incredible sort of deeply humanistic kind of quality. I mean, human condition is a kind of a term that gets bandied around a lot, but there's something about that term that seems fitting for this director. And this film, I Wish, again, is set, is about a family in Japan that I think they encounter some sort of trauma. Lots of his films are about family dynamics, or they're about people, real people in a way. So I'm not sure if many people are familiar with his work, but I think, judging by his previous works, this is going to be a really impressive film.
Okay, so just to repeat there for the director's name and the session time.
Yep, so Hirokazu Koreeda is the director.
Koreeda.
And the sessions is one tomorrow at 1:30, and then again Monday the 13th at 6:30.
Okay, that's called I Wish.
There's a retrospective that they've organised this year for a French filmmaker called Jean Epstein, who I've heard of but haven't seen. Any of his works. So tonight I'm actually seeing a documentary based upon some of his cinema called Jean Epstein, Young Oceans of Cinema. That's at Acme at 6:30 tonight. And then
better get your skates
so
on.
Yeah, you'd better hurry up or you'd better hope you're in the
Are
city already.
Are you going straight to there after this?
I am. I'm rushing off.
Yep.
And some of his other films, mostly made in the 1920s and 30s, The Fall of the House of Usher and The Faithful Heart. This filmmaker, from what I understand, he's been referred to as the first philosophical filmmaker.
Right. How long ago are we talking?
So 1920s and 30s, of the films are from. I think he was born in the late 1800s, mm-hmm. died 1950-ish, thereabouts. Part of the French philosophical movement, you know, the theorist with cinema and so on, the French New Wave, all that kind of great movement that we saw emerging in the sort of the 40s, 50s and 60s. So he's part of that. So this is a kind of catch-up on a filmmaker that I probably should have, you know, been up to date with already.
So you're filling in the missing gaps in your film knowledge.
There's a few of those this year. I'm ashamed to admit this. I've never seen Harold and Maude.
You're kidding.
I know. How shameful is that?
What kind of film critic are you?
Yeah, terrible.
Really?
I know.
That's amazing.
So that's getting a screening tomorrow at
Harold and Maude.
Harold and Maude.
At the film fest.
Well, it got mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about friendship films.
Yes.
And I thought, well, I really should see it now that's on the big screen. Why not?
No. Hey, look, before I ask you about other myth films,
yep.
The list from Sight and Sound magazine, the British Film Institute, I've got to admit, I hadn't seen a lot of the films on the list. The key news out of that was that Vertigo had beaten out Citizen Kane. Any thoughts on the list? I mean, are they films? I'd love to know both Citizen. I found Citizen Kane very difficult to sit through, and I've only actually enjoyed reading about it rather than watching it. Is Vertigo a worthy winner for best film of all time?
Well, this
is the most prestigious list in the world.
Apparently. I'm a skeptic about lists anyway and ranking films in that order. Having said that, I think Vertigo is an amazing film.
Yeah.
And I think its influence is really about structure. And when you were talking about the other day, and the person from Acme was on and talking about this notion of obsessive desire and a fantasy about femininity, it's really fascinating. And Bernard Herrmann's score is just amazing. Yeah. And I think I made the point that Citizen Kane, Vertigo, and possibly my favourite film of all time, Taxi Driver, were all scored by Bernard Herrmann. So maybe it's the Herrmann connection is what ties these great films together.
Same sound in Taxi Driver.
Yep, same composer. It was his last film. He died.
Taxi Driver your favourite film?
Well, it's probably the most influential film in terms of maybe film critic. And
now, look, we've got just a few minutes before the news. One more recommendation for the film festival?
Okay, this is one I've been plugging a little bit, Side by Side. It's a documentary. It's about cinema. It's about this sort of the revolution of digital taking over celluloid.
Mm-hmm.
Interviews with lots of directors, Scorsese, David Lynch, Steven Soderbergh, Christopher Nolan. And we get this contrast from what I've read about Christopher Nolan saying he refuses to use digital. It has to be 35 mil. He won't use anything other than celluloid. And then on the other side, people like David Lynch saying they're done with film. So look, the interviews are conducted by Keanu Reeves, who was a producer.
You're kidding.
And apparently he's a really good interviewer. And maybe it's because he has a bond with these filmmakers. But yeah, this is what sort of excites me about this documentary.
You would never pick Keanu Reeves as a good interviewer.
Never. So Side by Side, that's playing two sessions at the festival. The one I'm seeing is Wednesday, the 8th of August.
Okay. 4:30. Okay, so Side by Side and I Wish, we also spoke. So they are at the film festival and The Sapphires is on general release. Josh, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure as always.
Josh Nelson, you can check out his blog at filmology.com. That is spelt with a PH.